From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with those calls, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, the FDA is now requiring proof that antibacterial soaps are safe. Very interesting. We've talked about things like this before. We're going to talk about whether or not you should even have it in your house.
Okay.
And the FDA is restricting the use of antibiotics for livestock. We've talked about that before. We'll look at it again. This is sort of FDAville. Let's get our act together.
My wife is so excited about that because she's so afraid of the stuff in meat.
Sure.
So this should change things, right?
Well, we'll see.
What's our recipe?
Yes, the greatest American gyro. Now, I've got a question for you. Is it gyro or gyro?
I would say gyro, but you're the expert.
Oh, I live in Chicago. Years ago, I lived there, and we called them gyro and gyro. So, you know, maybe someone out there will tell us the correct pronunciation. Nonetheless,
I'm sure we'll
it's
hear
the greatest.
We're going to hear it.
It won't be the grammar police. It will be the speech police this time.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Moore, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi there. How are y'all doing today?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I have kind of a complicated story, but after my first deployment to Iraq in 2003, I came home and I was diagnosed with GERD and acid reflux. And even at times when my reflux is under control, I still have difficulty swallowing food without water on hand. And I had been listening to the show one day and heard Tom actually mention that he might have a similar condition. So I was curious about what that condition is and if there's things that I can do to kind of help it.
Well, first, thanks for your service. How many deployments have you had?
I did three.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of service. So thank you very much for doing that. Are you on any medications at all?
Yes, I take Protonix on a regular basis, and that's it.
And that's it. Okay, and what kind of work do you do right now? Are you inside or outside?
College student. I'm going to school on the GI Bill.
Okay. So when you get this, when you say you can't swallow without have something in the water, is this any kind of food that you're eating or certain foods that seem to bother you?
You know, it's pretty much whenever I eat. The idea of trying to eat something without a drink is something that I just don't even imagine myself doing.
Okay. Now, what about when you were in the service? Did that happen there too? Was it the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. This has been going on for a long, long time.
How about before that, before you had your deployments? It's gone on since you were a kid?
Yeah, I think so. Now, not the GERD so much. Okay. That was kind of new, but the swallowing thing has been going on for quite some time.
Okay.
And I've had esophageal widenings. I've had two. And they didn't help.
Okay. They did not help. In other words, do you get food stuck in your throat now, or you had them widened in order to help with the GERD? Why'd you have them done?
To help with the GERD, and the GI docs at the VA also are aware of my difficulty swallowing and thought that it would alleviate it.
Okay.
It might help for a little bit, but still the problem has returned.
Okay. So when you drink something before you eat, does it get rid of the whole problem?
So if I drink right before I eat?
Yeah.
No. It's actually when the food gets stuck, I actually need water to help it.
To help get it down.
Right.
What about when you start eating, you're sitting down, you're going to sit down, you're going to have a meal, typical college meal, burger or something like that. Sit down, you don't drink anything before you start.
I guess not typically.
Okay, I've got a couple ideas. First of all, let's look at the GERD for a minute. GERD is helped by Protonix, which is a good drug, just like Prilosec. It's one of the PPI, proton pump inhibitors, best taken on an empty stomach in the morning. Is that when you take it? Is that how you do it?
That is when I take it.
Yeah.
First thing I do when I wake up.
First thing you do when you wake up. Just because before you have any food in your stomach, it's always best to have this around. You can add something if you still have GERD, which is you take Zantac 300 milligrams over the counter or by prescription. It can be cheaper with a drug card at bedtime. Are you doing that?
I'm not.
combination of both of those can make a big difference in GERD. In other words, Zantac works in a different system, and often GERD is an issue when you're sleeping at night. It's just there's too much acid still in your stomach. And for some people, they actually take Protonix twice a day, but I found Zantac at bedtime also makes a big difference. So that's another possibility. And then, of course, GERD can be related to food, alcohol, coffee, hot, spicy food, all these things, individual food preferences. Look at those. See whether or not that makes a difference. On our website, zorbapastor.org, we'll put some GERD information on there so you can look at it. Now, there's an old-fashioned drug called Reglan, R-E-G-L-A-N. That helps some people, but they do it. And that drug, metoclopramide, is the generic name, is on the market. And taking that once or twice a day from your doc may make a difference. It's a motility drug. Sometimes that helps. Another drug that helps, believe it or not, is nitroglycerin. Nitroglycerin, nitro that we give for heart attacks, relaxes the esophageal sphincter, and you put it under your tongue before you eat. And for some people, that makes a big difference. So you might look at either this drug Reglan, which is easier to pronounce than metoclopramide. I mean, you know, they make these names so large. Or nitroglycerin. Both of those drugs may help. But the way to do it without that, and the way to consider it, is getting in the habit of saying, you know, I'm going to have something to drink beforehand, and have a few swallows of something to drink just to lubricate your esophagus before you start. Have a drink. Discover whether or not the drink should be lukewarm, super cold like ice, or hot. In other words, you may find one makes a difference because they all make a difference in motility. And that's a non-drug way of looking at this. But the drinking beforehand is something that you can do immediately without looking at these prescription drugs.
Okay, well, that sounds great.
I hope that helps. And thank you for your service. We all really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for your help.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, I didn't even realize this. There may be some danger to antibacterial soap, and the FDA is taking a look at this?
Well, let's look at why we use antibacterial soaps.
To get rid of the bacteria.
Yeah, right. You know something?
Nothing, I figured that out.
Nothing gets past you. You know what? I am always amazed at the scope, the length and breadth of your learning. Not only that, but the insight.
Yeah, it's a lot of years of college.
The insight is a lot of years of college. That's right. And a lot of years of public radio. You can't get anything past public radio. Antibacterial soap. But we do it because we become germophobes. There's antibacterial chemicals that are put into countertops, that are put into hot tubs, that are put into sinks, that are put into bathtubs. And as a result, there are fewer bacteria around. And there are a lot of issues overall whether or not we're doing ourselves harm. That's a separate interesting issue. We've talked about that quite a bit. Now, here is where the FDA is saying, first of all, we know that these get rid of bacteria in the environment. There actually has not been a lot of proof that it actually cuts down, except in the hospital environment, that it actually cuts down on bad bugs. In the hospital, in the doctor's office, it's a totally different issue because you have bad bugs there all around. But the feds are wondering whether or not the stuff in it is safe.
Okay.
Now, before we go into what they're looking at is safe, the question I have is, why now? In other words, they've been on the market forever. When I was a kid, Dial had antibacterial stuff in the soap. And so why are the feds looking at this
now?
That's
a good question. Is there did something show up that would cause them to take a look at this?
No, or is it the culture? Is it that people are just demanding the FDA look at things that for years they've said are safe? And that's the question. I don't know. I think it's actually a cultural issue. I think that if you raise enough shouting to the FDA, they begin to look at these things and they say, we're going to do something about it. So in liquid soaps, there is a chemical called triclosan, T-R-I-C-L-O-S-A-N, triclosan. And in bar soaps, it's triclobarban. So in other words, these are little chemicals that are in there.
Okay.
And deodorant soaps often have it. And the feds have said, they opened it up to a public comment for the next half a year, that they want the manufacturers of antibacterial soaps to do studies to find out whether or not they're safe. In other words, they're going to have to develop a way of doing long-term studies to see whether or not people get more infection somewhere else or get chemicals in their bloodstream. And I want to give a perfect example of this in the past.
Okay.
When I was a medical student, babies were taken out of the mother's arms for 24 hours, hard to believe, mm-hmm. and washed with something called Physohex. You remember? Physohex was used for acne,
yeah.
and they discovered if they washed a baby with Physohex, the umbilical cord looked nice and shiny and no pus around it. And so I'm serious. I'm not being facetious. Might be good for the baby. Yeah. Before that, we used to put on a dye called Triple Dye to make it shrink up, and then it kind of looked yucky and had a little pus on the surface. And so we did that for about 10, 15 years, until there was a Mayo Clinic or another group did a study to find out that hexachlorophene levels that were in Physohex were abnormally high in babies, and hexachlorophene is a neurotoxin.
Yeah.
So here it was we were keeping the babies beautifully non-pussy little umbilical cords, and we were actually giving them a chemical in their brain. That was 30 years ago.
I don't see how they can study this if we don't know any effect, negative effect on this. So how are you going to do balanced studies when you can't find anybody that has anything wrong?
The first thing they would demand they do is do blood levels of the chemical in the bloodstream. You're washing your hands. Do you expect it to be in your bloodstream? Now you're washing your hands and you have a cut on your hand. Do you expect it to be in your bloodstream? Now you have a cut on your hand. You've got psoriasis. You've got a dermatitis. Is it in your bloodstream? That would be the first set of tests. And then if it's in the bloodstream, they would have to do animal tests initially to see if this chemical in the bloodstream is harmful.
Yeah, are we going to have results on this in my grandchildren's lifetime?
Well, that's another story.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener in Berlin, Wisconsin, is with us. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
I have a question about calcium supplements. A couple weeks ago, I went to my doctor for a checkup, and she very sternly told me, I want you to stop taking calcium. She said, because it can build up in your system and could cause a heart attack within 10 years. I've been taking calcium for like 40 years every day. I'm small-boned, and this is one thing I really don't feel like following, and I just wanted your input on this subject.
You mean your doctor might say something and you don't want to follow it? Oh, shame, shame, shame.
Yes. This is the first time it goes against my grain. Totally.
Well, you know what?
Doctors are omnipotent.
That's right. That's right, doctor. Omnipotent. A great word for public radio. Omnipotent. That's right. Question authority. You know, those were the days. That's what I learned in the 60s. Well, let me give you the calcium data. The studies have looked at inorganic calcium. First of all, calcium in dairy products is kind of absorbed differently, and it's in dairy products. So a container of calcium contains roughly about 400 milligrams of calcium. We need about 1,000 milligrams a day. The data seems to show that once you drop below 750, not 1,000, but 750, you run a risk of osteoporosis. Now, there is no data that if you pump your body full of 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams of calcium, that you will prevent osteoporosis or improve your condition. And for years, we doctors have been saying, take that calcium, you have osteoporosis, you'll improve things. And the fact is, it doesn't actually work. Mm. Now, going to the Americans for years have said 1,800 milligrams of calcium. I did research, and I have no idea where that number came from. Now, what's the data on heart attacks and calcium? People who take calcium in a large tablet amount, like 1,000 milligrams, have an increased risk of a heart attack for a couple of hours following. It doesn't build up. Following taking the calcium, because the calcium level in your bloodstream is abnormally high. When it's abnormally high, there it turns out that there is a small but substantial increase in risk of having a heart attack during that period when it's abnormally high. You follow what I'm saying? It goes in the bloodstream, it goes high.
Yes.
So it's abnormally high. So what I am now recommending, because I did an article on this in the newspaper, and we'll put that newspaper article on my website, zorbapastor.org. Mm-hmm. What my recommendation now is, if you tolerate dairy products, get at least half of it from dairy, so a container of yogurt every day, the yogurt of your choice. And the second thing is, if you're going to take a calcium tablet, no more than 500 milligrams. If you're not going to have any dairy products at all, you might take 500 milligrams in the morning and 500 milligrams in the evening, but take it with food. Why? Because food slows the absorption. And the goal is not to have a sudden blood level of calcium. So I don't think you have to go more than 1,000 milligrams a day, 500 in the morning, 500 in the evening. But in the morning, if you want to have yogurt, or in the evening, make that your calcium. That's my recommendation. It does not build up in the bloodstream. It's something that's there momentarily, and that's where your risk is.
Okay. And then I had one other thing. I talked to a Greek restaurant owner in our small town, and he said when you say gyro, drop the G.
Thank you. I knew someone would tell me the right way to do it.
Thanks. We're getting to that, so do it right.
I'll do it right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
No,
we appreciate the call. I should have said omniscient instead of omnipotent.
Well,
you both?
You know, I'm both. I'm omniscient and omnipotent.
Before we take a quick break, however, let's check the inbox and tackle a grating question from a listener, Marlene. She asks, "Dear Dr. Zorba, this is a serious problem and I need an answer fast. What is the name of the grater that is so great? You mentioned it while talking about making zest for a recipe. I would like to try it and give it to each of my children. Just what they need, right? I do enjoy Tom. I enjoy Tom and you on the show, and thank you for the great hearty laughs. What's the name?"
Absolutely, by the way. It is just what they need. It's a microplane. And we'll put a link to it on our website, zorbapastor.org. And it was a guy who was actually a carpenter, and his wife went down and borrowed one of his he was a carpenter, and he made planes himself. And she went down one day and used one of his homemade planes, and she said, "This is great for cheese." Mm. And then he started manufacturing the planes, and believe me, he's worth a gazillion dollars.
So it's plain like
P-L-A-N-E. No, it's well, you know what? I'm not going to tell you which way to spell it, it's a microplane. It is hands down the best grater for Parmesan. They have one for zesting, and that's the those are the only grates. The only graters that I use, not grates, graters. They're great graters.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
Okay. We have our recipe coming up for whatever that is. We'll get to that. Lots more of your questions, some more interesting research to talk over, our medical myth buster. Stick around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. A toll-free number is 1-800-462-7413. Callers waiting, but an open line now for you at 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, our recipe.
Yes, the greatest American gyro. Now I know how to pronounce it. That's exactly it. Drop the G and say it with finesse. The greatest American gyro.
A lot of people don't say that right.
Well, that's, I mean,
including,
I was, you know.
Including you and me.
That's right, including me. That's right. Now we know. Now we know how to say it. Okay. So start out with 1 cup of plain non-fat yogurt. 2 tablespoonfuls of fresh dill chopped.
2 tablespoonfuls of fresh dill chopped.
Now, Tom, what do you do if there's not fresh dill in the grocery store?
I just keep on living my life without being bothered.
That's right. Well, you can buy dill in a tube. You can buy it in the tube at a good grocery store.
Oh, really?
Now. And it'll work. It's okay. It actually, it's dill. It's dill in some kind of a liquid form.
Yeah,
it's not fresh,
yeah.
But it actually will add the flavor that you want to have.
Okay.
A large clove of garlic minced.
A large garlic clove minced.
A tablespoonful of fresh lemon juice.
A big tea fresh lemon juice.
Now, 1 pound of boneless, skinless chicken breast cut into 1/2-inch strips. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to use chicken thighs, which are tastier, you're going to have more fat.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you could use chicken thighs, but it'll add fat to the diet. Mm-hmm. A teaspoon of dried oregano.
Little tea, dried oregano.
And if you want to use Italian seasoning, which I often do, which is oregano and another mix, 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea, extra virgin olive oil.
2 medium onions, thinly sliced. If you want a red one, it'll look prettier. Mm-hmm.
2 medium onions, thinly sliced.
1 large tomato, diced.
A large tomato, diced.
1 medium cucumber, diced.
A medium cucumber, diced.
4 pita bread rounds.
4 pita bread rounds.
Let's make the recipe.
Okay.
The yogurt sauce. So stir in yogurt, 2 tablespoonfuls of chopped dill, or like I said, the dill that's in the little squeeze bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Garlic, teaspoon of lemon juice in a small bowl, blend it to season it, and then season it with salt and pepper. Salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, depending on how much lemon you like, you might use a teaspoon, you might use a tablespoonful. I recommend it just like with salt and pepper, you do it to your taste.
Mm-hmm.
Place the chicken in a medium bowl. Sprinkle it with oregano or Italian seasoning, a teaspoon of the dill, and once again, it can be the dill sauce in the little squeeze tube, salt and pepper. Toss it to coat. Then heat 1 tablespoonful of oil in a heavy, large skillet, medium-high heat. Make sure that oil gets nice and hot before you add the chicken, or the chicken will soak up more oil and will still stick to the pan. Then add chicken, saute until brown. Cook it through about 5 minutes. Transfer it to a plate. And add 1 tablespoon of oil to the skillet, because you'll need that to cook the onions. Sauté them until they're beginning to brown, and make sure there'll be bits of onion stuck to the bottom of the pan if you use a nonstick pan. That's called the frond, and there's a lot of taste in it. So scrape it out. Do this for about 10 minutes. Return the chicken, add any juices to the skillet, mix it all up, and add 1 tablespoonful of lemon juice. Heat it through for about 2 minutes. This is where having 1 lemon on hand, so you've got lots of good juice, really pays off. Warm and arrange the pitas on a plate. Top the pitas with the chicken mixture. Add the mixture of diced tomatoes and cucumbers. Spoon some yogurt sauce over the chicken. Is your mouth watering? Obviously, you're not a gyro fan. My mouth is watering. I can hardly talk. And if you want to, serve it with a little side of feta. Now your mouth is watering, right? Obviously, it's not. This is not time to play. This is a delicious recipe.
Yeah.
If you want a copy of today's recipe, come to our website at zorbapastor.org. You can find this recipe, other recipes, see photos of Tom, wonderful photos of Tom. I'm going to get rid of all the photos of me. See our new grammar policeman. He's going to be the captain of the grammar police. Or you can find us through Facebook. We are all over Facebook. That's zorbapastor.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Burlington, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi. How are you guys?
Fine. How can we help?
I'm calling. You recently had a broadcast about the new guidelines of statins to control cholesterol. I'm 70 years old, in relatively good health. I have high blood pressure, but it's well-controlled. But my cholesterol numbers are very high. My doctor and I have tried all the statins. They control my cholesterol, but they give me bad side effects. I watch my diet very religiously, exercise 5 days a week for 30 minutes or more. And I wanted to know what Dr. Zorba tells his patients when they encounter this problem.
Sure. No, it's an issue. A couple of questions. How's your diet? Pretty good diet?
Mediterranean? Diet is very good. Yeah. I watch all
diet
the high fats, no saturated fats.
So you've got a good diet. Got a good diet.
Yes.
How about exercise?
Exercise. I exercise 5 to 6 days a
uh-huh.
week.
Okay.
Either, you know, some type of cardio or I do
uh-huh.
yoga.
Okay, good. Excellent. Stressed in your life? How's your life? Pretty good?
Excuse me. Life is stressful.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So
my husband's got some issues.
Uh-huh.
So there's
psychological stressors, because
exactly.
That's a negative. But physiologically, things pushing the cholesterol off to the side, you exercise and you eat right. And you've got longevity in your family. If you had heart attacks in your family at the age of 45, like your mom or your dad or both of them, it would be a bigger issue than what it is. So we can't be a slave to the numbers. And in fact, the new guidelines say no slave, don't pay attention to the numbers. The new guidelines are sort of interesting. So the first question is, if we want to add some extra risk reduction to what you're doing, that's all we're thinking of, is to try the lowest dose of a statin that you may tolerate even twice a week or three times a week. So one way of doing it, not pushing the numbers, because actually the new guidelines say the numbers that we've been looking at for years don't count. It's being on the drug or not. So what I would recommend trying is the teeniest, tiniest dose of a statin that you might tolerate. And I would try that once a week and see if you tolerate it. And if you tolerate it once a week, the next week I'd go up to twice a week, and the next week I'd go up to every other day. And if you tolerate that,
side effects.
Well, if you don't have the muscle aches and side effects. In other words, I would see whether or not you could tolerate it. And for some people, they will tolerate it once a week, twice a week, every other day. And then some people actually move up to every day and they have no side effects. What the problem is if you have side effects, then I would just give it up. I wouldn't use any other drug because no other drug that affects these numbers has been shown to be worthwhile to prevent heart attacks and strokes. And I would then bask in the knowledge of knowing I got parents in my 90s and they lived into my 90s because you are, because of your genetic history, you're actually at a very low risk for heart attacks. And we know people who have these high numbers like this. There are a lot of them who still live into their 80s or 90s. When we look at the whole population, there are people like this who don't have your family history and don't live into the 90s. So it's clear there are other factors such as C-reactive protein and inflammation that play a role in what you're doing. So I would try the tiniest statin if you want to do it, and I wouldn't pay attention to the numbers because it's not going to drop them much.
Okay.
Thank you very much
Thank
for your
you.
Call.
I appreciate your help, and I just Pleasure. Want to compliment you on your bedside manner. You are truly meant to be a doctor.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you. I thank you for the compliment.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's true. That's true what she said.
Thanks.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 1-800-462-7413. And a Wichita, Kansas listener is next, Sorba. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I have an extended orthopedic history on both of my legs, but about 10 years ago, I did break my left leg. It was a compound fracture. They put a rod in the leg, and it healed. You know, it was 10 years ago, I haven't had any problems, except all of a sudden, last month, I have this sensation in my foot. It's not in my ankle, it's not in my toes. It's like popping of your knuckles, you know, like when people crack their knuckles and they do it a lot, they kind of do that rolling snap, crackle, pop. That's what it feels like in my foot. It doesn't hurt, but it's just a very odd sensation, and I'm really worried that there's something going wrong.
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, I want to go back to this. So you're popping in a sound, but it's not painful.
Correct.
Okay. You had a fracture in your leg, a compound fracture in your leg. Was it in your foot?
No.
Okay. So
there were two fractures of the tibia and one of the fibula.
Okay. So was it an automobile accident? What kind of accident was it?
I fell down some stairs.
Okay. So,
but I will tell you, there was a subsequent, what happened, the rod that was put in the leg was too long and it was in my ankle space.
Okay. It was in the ankle space.
And
okay.
And it did break the ankle, but, you know, but it all healed up. Now, I have had chronic edema, but it got a lot worse when this started happening.
Uh-huh. So you did have, so in other words, your ankle was affected by the surgery because the rod turned out to be too long and went into the ankle. So it affected that joint.
Right, and then, about 6 months after the leg was healed.
Okay, so you had a second surgery to correct that, right?
Yeah.
And then you've had swelling in that ankle ever since?
Yeah.
And what do you do for the swelling?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay, so it's not a swelling that's too much and that interferes with walking or anything else?
No. Uh-huh. I mean, I do limp. Mm-hmm. I liken myself to Igor. But,
to Igor.
You know, I am I'm still upright and I'm going.
Have you had an x-ray at all?
I did go to the emergency room because the sensation felt just like it did when the ankle broke. And they just said it wasn't broken and told me to go to an orthopedic surgeon.
One of the things you want to find out and look at is whether or not there's something else happening with the hardware that you have in your leg and in your ankle. It's not in your ankle now. It's away from your ankle. Probably not, but maybe. That's what I would say, because you don't have pain. And usually if there are hardware problems, you get pain. So you have swelling and pain, and you only have swelling, you only have swelling with a sound. But this is a change in condition in a foot and a leg that has had a couple of surgeries and had a very, 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 very serious break. So I think that they actually gave you the right advice. You really do need to be seen, certainly by an orthopedic surgeon, and you have to have other imaging done of your ankle and your foot just to make sure that nothing is going on. In other words, it may be just you have snap, crackle, and pop. My joints pop, my left knee pops, my back pops, sometimes my right wrist pops, but it doesn't have pain. But my left wrist, which doesn't pop, does have pain. So, and I had an x-ray taken of that, and that has arthritis. So you can't always tell from the sound whether or not there's something going on. And I think if you've had something such as this, you went immediately to the ER, and they did a plain film x-ray and said there's no break, but you need an evaluation more than that. So I hope that gives you enough information for you to make that decision. And I think this show really serves for allowing people to make their own decisions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you
All
for
right.
your call.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. And before we take a break, Zorba, let's hear from the much feared group, the Furnace Police.
The Furnace Police? they must be in secret because I have never seen them. They're little gremlins. No. They're behind the scenes.
Here it comes. Angie in Madison, Wisconsin writes, "Gads, I finally convinced my duplex neighbor to only run her furnace's humidifier during the daytime hours because the incessant and intermittent droning noise kept me awake at night. Only to read your weekly column yesterday, and now she has it on at night again. And I am awake from 2 a.m. on. Why couldn't you have just advised to run one of those small room humidifiers? Don't you know how much water those large furnace systems use? Please, Zorba, print a retraction, or I will not get any sleep this winter."
Oh, my goodness. There's always two sides to every story, isn't there?
I've got to say, we have a humidifier thing on the front that doesn't make any noise at all.
No, so we don't have one that makes any noise either. So,
apparently that one in the duplex just roars.
Oh, that's it. It's just a roaring humidifier with a Niagara Falls shower of water that's going down. Humidifiers are great, and they're especially great at night when you're sleeping,
but your mouth is
open, and when your air is dry, but she is not sleeping. So, but I have a way that she can actually solve the problem. What she should do is for $39.95, go and buy her neighbor an ultrasonic humidifier they don't make any sound at all, and tell her neighbor, turn off the humidifier when you go to sleep at night and put the ultrasonic humidifier in the room, and she will get sleep, and her neighbor will get nice, moist air to sleep.
Does ultrasonic, that means doesn't use water?
No, it shakes the water. No, it uses water.
It shakes the water.
It doesn't actually blow the water, but it kind of shakes the water with ultrasound. Oh, that's actually what it does. And a little air goes in. No noise. Noiseless. $39.95. She can solve the problem. But unfortunately, I am not going to retract it.
Does Zorba's advice have you all fired up?
Ooh.
Send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some interesting research coming up. More of your questions, of course, our medical myth buster too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But, Zorba, before our next call, you bring with some info on the FDA restriction of antibiotics for livestock.
That's right. Antibiotics have been used forever on livestock because they grow plumper. they get better. And so they're put into the feed, they're put into the water, even if they're not sick. In other words, they just give antibiotics willy-nilly.
Yeah.
We've known this for years. When I was an undergraduate student, I took care of rats in the psychology lab, and we added tetracycline to the water of the rats. And the rats didn't get sick, and they grew bigger. And so this has been done forever.
I don't care about that if it's rats, but if it's cattle...
Right. Then you care about it because we eat cattle.
Yeah.
And so a number of people over the years have said to the FDA, look, this is causing drug resistance, and we have drug resistance in a number of bacteria that affect us. And there are a lot of people who believe that these bugs are coming because we have the indiscriminate use of antibiotics in animals that are not sick. If they're sick, it becomes a totally different issue. Mm-hmm. So the feds have said we have to put a stop to this. And the farmers and the feedlots have said, oh, wait a minute. We, you know, this is going to raise the price of beef and a pork and of chicken because basically these animals are not going to get as big and they're not going to produce as much. And as a result, the prices are going to go up. And the consumers, on the other hand, have said in not so many words, wait a minute. We don't want the prices to go up on animal protein that we're eating. And there's been a logjam, and that's where it has sit for at least a decade. Or 2 decades. And the feds have finally come out of the box with their boxing gloves on, and they proposed voluntary rules initially, voluntary rules for guidelines for companies that actually produce the majority of these antibiotics. And they have now said, well, these voluntary rules are really important. And guys, if you don't follow them, we are basically going to say you're going to have to follow mandatory rules that we're going to put in place.
Well, why don't they just do the mandatory rules?
Well, that's an interesting question. Why don't they just go right away to mandatory rules? You know, there's a lot of pushback. There's a lot of money in this. You know, there are the price supports from the farm bill, and then there's money, and then there's, you know, that the farmers are making and their consumers, and the feds only have so much power. And sometimes if they go to the companies like the drug companies and say, we want you only to, you're going to say you can only deliver this if the animal is sick, they're hoping that there's going to be some voluntary participation. But if not, then the feds are going to step in and make absolute rules. I think this is a good idea. I think that we've used antibiotics indiscriminately. If it increases the price of animal protein, but it improves the health of our country, it's worthwhile. And I think that scientifically, we have to stop the indiscriminate use of antibiotics in animals.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, and a listener with us in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, we appreciate it. How can we help?
Well, 3 months ago, I was out on a long walk and was coming back in and felt a vibration in my thigh just above my knee. And kind of chalked it up to working out, possibly loss of some potassium or something, but it's becoming increasingly more frequent. I'm having them several times a day. And I just was wondering if this is something that's common, if it's happening to more than just myself. Do you have any suggestions on where I should go next?
Oh, sure. So you've got, tell me a little bit more about your symptoms.
Well, it's a vibration. At first, it felt like it was as deep as the bone.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a cell phone vibrating. Uh-huh. Like if I was to put my cell phone in my pocket, that's what it feels like.
I have to tell you something very interesting. There are ghost vibrations that occur for people with cell phones. I'm not recommending that this is the issue, but I have those intermittently. And I had them especially, I was in India for 2 weeks and I didn't have my cell phone, but I felt the vibration in my pocket. And I would put my hand in my pocket and go, I don't have my cell phone here. Where does the vibration come? And then I was talking to my daughter, Vanessa, and she said, oh, come on, Dad, this happens all the time. And she was a ski instructor, a snowboard instructor. And she said, it happens on the ski hill where you're reaching for your cell phone. You realize the cell phone isn't there. Tom has his mouth wide open. It's like, he's
I don't have a cell phone.
You don't have a cell phone?
No.
Tom doesn't have a cell phone?
Are you surprised by that?
Yeah. No, I guess I'm not surprised. But I thought...
You don't know what a Luddite I am.
Yes, you're clearly a Luddite if you don't have a cell phone.
No,
that means you have like just a landline?
I keep looking for payphones.
So part of this, believe it or not, may be a ghost vibration. This occurred obviously recently. How long has this been going on?
About
3 months ago. There's no dysfunction, no problem walking or anything like that?
No. Uh-huh. No. Uh-huh. It's a little, it's an odd sensation, uh-huh. and it's numbing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the places that you can go to find out if there's anything that can be measured would be to get an EMG. EMG. EM as in Mary, G. And it's an electromyogram. And it looks basically at the nerves in the arms and legs and how they're working. That's how we diagnose carpal tunnel syndrome. It's how I help diagnose whether or not there's dysfunction in the back. Sometimes we can diagnose if somebody has a disc. And that's what you would have. You'd have an EMG and you'd see a neurologist, see if there's anything there. And if there's nothing there, then you may just be having these ghost vibrations. And as I said, I have them. So I know that they're real, and I don't think I'm nuts. I don't think I'm going nuts, but
it happened to me
for India in 2 weeks. And as I said, I mentioned it to my daughter, and she said everybody gets them. So part of this is sort of a memory and an anticipation of a vibration, because sometimes the cell phone vibrations are so small, we wonder if they're there, and I think the body is just looking for the signal. And everyone in the United States of America, except for Tom Clark, probably has had this experience. But he's the Luddite. He's the outlier. I can't believe you don't have a cell phone. I mean, what if you get into like a car accident? What are you going to do?
I don't know. Hope for the kindness of strangers.
Who have cell phones.
Yeah.
The kindness of strangers,
right. Exactly.
With cell phones. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Yep, we appreciate it.
You know, I am actually surprised. I thought you would just have – Monica has a cell phone.
Yeah, my wife has a cell phone. Moving right along, before our next call, Zorba, time for our medical myth buster, which comes this time from a listener, Garrett, in Platteville, Wisconsin. Garrett writes, "Dear Doc, recently you had a listener ask about whether your body does or does not absorb the fat in milk, therefore making the difference between skim and 2% milk irrelevant. I have been told that our body cannot properly absorb the protein found in milk due to pasteurization, and that milk actually depletes our calcium levels. Is this, in fact, true?"
Oh, absolutely a myth, 100%. You know, there is a cadre of people who believe that raw milk is wonderful and is good. So let's talk about what pasteurization does and doesn't do. Pasteurization destroys bacteria. You push up milk, I think it's to 181 degrees, for 15 seconds, and you get rid of Listeria, strep, E. coli, staph, tuberculosis, things that were common and caused disease and death many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Pasteurization does not destroy the body's ability to absorb calcium at all, nor does it destroy the ability to absorb protein or milk sugar. It keeps milk totally well. What it does is destroy the bacteria. Now, there is a cadre of people who believe that there are good bacteria in milk that are also being destroyed that have health-promoting properties. So I liken this to wearing seatbelts. I have put a seatbelt on over my body for at least 30 years. I have done it, 100,000 times, mm-hmm. or something. And you know what? I've never gotten into an automobile accident, a bad automobile accident. So the reality is wearing this seatbelt for the last 30 years has been worthless,
mm-hmm.
right? Because for 100,000 times, I've never gotten into an automobile accident. So taking that time to put on the seatbelt has been a worthless activity. However,
yeah.
I continue to do it under the idea that maybe one out of 100,000 times, I'm going to get into a serious
accident.
Just like
accident. The rest of us, right.
It's the same for raw milk. Mm. Most of the time, you'll get away with it. Every single time you think you're going to get away with it, one out of maybe 100,000 or 50,000 times, there'll be a spray bacteria that has managed to get on the udder of that cow that manages to get into the milk that may cause destruction. That's it. You take your risk. You make your decision. I am firmly on the side of pasteurization, and I have seen no study in any credible scientific journal, mm-hmm. that has shown that these good bacteria are doing anything. And I believe that the cadre of people who believe the good bacteria are good, and I believe that they're good people, but I believe that it is something akin to a religious zeal that raw milk is worthwhile. And I think it's okay for people to drive recklessly without a seatbelt as long as they don't injure me. And if they drink raw milk, they're not going to injure me. However, when it comes to giving raw milk to their children who are underage, who don't have the ability to do it, that becomes another issue. And as you can see, I feel passionately about that because I'm in the cadre of medical people and physicians who say, hey, pasteurization was a step forward.
You're going to get a few emails saying you don't care whether people wear seatbelts or
not. Do you think?
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to pasteurize? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Omak, Washington. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, how can we help?
I have a question about sleep aids. I'm a 62-year-old retired teacher, and I'm trying to wean myself off the stuff. I frequently took generic Benadryl to sleep. Now that I'm retired, I'm trying to sleep without it, and you know, I usually take one. I've never taken more than one, but I'm finding that I'm having a bit of trouble when I get up to visit the bathroom at night. I'll frequently have trouble getting back to sleep, and that's kind of part of my question is, you know, am I really doing myself any harm?
Not at all. Not at all. If you don't have side effects and you feel pretty good, hard to believe, you know. I mean, Benadryl is not addictive. You can't sell it on the black market because it's available in Walgreens. And you can't get high on it. It's an antihistamine whose side effect is sleepiness. The sleep authorities say, well, it doesn't produce the same this and that in REM sleep. And I would say to them, well, if people take it and they don't seem to have side effects, what's the problem taking it? And I don't think there's any problem taking it at all. And for some people, it turns that it's worthwhile. So you can you can go through other things, but for some people, they just don't sleep as well at night. And I think Benadryl is safe and effective, and I recommend it to people. Other people find that it makes them groggy in the morning. It just stays around too long, and you know they can't take it. So my first thought is take Benadryl. Now, for drugs such as Ambien, they have a different side effect profile in that they can produce amnesia. There are questions about their safety long term. There's addictive questions. Ambien, which is the most common sleep pill, and Halcyon, which was before Ambien, I think they have more side effects. Another drug called gabapentin, it's an anti-seizure drug used in common pain. It's got its own side effect profile. So what I think is every drug you take to help you sleep has a side effect profile. If you feel good and you feel better and you can get 8 hours of sleep with an over-counter medication such as Benadryl, and all the sleep aids have Benadryl in them, use it.
Terrific, because it's cheap.
Yeah.
I tried melatonin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for most people, melatonin doesn't do much. For some people, it works.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not an addict.
You are not a Benadryl addict. No, that's right. That's right. The cops are not going to come banging down your door and then removing the Benadryl from your house. Yeah, that's
right. That is good news.
Yes, it is. Take care.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, good sleeping to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call. And before we go, Zorba, this seems like a good time to acknowledge a milestone here at Zorba Pastor on Your Health. You and I have been at this for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
Believe it or not, we're approaching our 22nd year of this show.
Oh, my God.
Carl, our producer, was digging through the archive room and unearthed a dusty box of cassette tapes, and he put together a few snippets from that very first show in January of 1992. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Hello again. I'm Tom Clark. Each week at this time, we'll be bringing you Dr. Zorba Pastor. He'll be here to answer your questions on the phone, your questions about health and medicine.
I have a question about the new skin patch that I've read about to help people stop smoking.
That would be an excellent alternative. The patches are coming out on the market. They should be available sometime this month. The cost for the patch will be about the same as the cost for a pack of cigarettes, so they won't be cheap because cigarettes aren't cheap. They're over $2 a pack.
I'm Tom Clark with Dr. Zorba Pastor. Dr. Pastor, what about lead poisoning and that wrapper around the wine?
Well, let's talk about lead from two sources, the wrapper and the goblet that you're drinking it from. If you happen to have a lead decanter at home that's filled with port or whiskey, I mean, I don't know anyone who does, but I've always seen it in the movies, that there's a tremendous amount of lead that leaches out, and you shouldn't be drinking anything out of that. Now, let's jump step to the wine wrapper.
Yeah.
When you pull that wrapper off, that foil wrapper happens to be lead. If you take it and give it to your child, they're going to get lead poisoning if they chew on it. And it turns out that there's lead dust that's left on the top of the wine bottle. And the recommendation now is to take the top of it and wipe it off with a cloth. Interestingly enough, the California wineries have jumped on the bandwagon right away and said they are going to phase out lead wrappers. And so there will not be lead wrappers on California wine, as far as I know it, after 1992 or 1993. They've decided to get rid of it. I think it's important to wipe the top of the wine bottle. I don't think you have to get rid of the expensive wine.
Before we take the break, what's this all about, Dr. Pastor, and why in the world would we be doing recipes in a program that deals with health and medicine?
When we're talking about good health, we can't talk about good health without exercise and without proper nutrition. So on every show, we're going to give a recipe from my tried and tested kitchen, a healthful recipe which will more or less be for fruit or vegetable or some other food that you may not have thought.
Okay.
It was useful.
That's coming up in just a minute, right here on the very first broadcast of Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Dr. Pastor, it's been fun. We look forward to next week, the same time.
You bet, Tom.
If you'd like a cassette copy of this last hour, we can sell you one.
I said a lot. Didn't I used to
You said I'm listening to my voice. I realize I talk just as fast then as I talk now, and I listened to the first caller, and that was my neighbor Karen Lederer. I recognized that.
Well, it was the first show. Yes, nobody knew we were here. So we had phony callers.
That's right. We had phony calls. And she was calling up because she was trying to get her husband, John, to quit smoking. That was so funny. And I love it. Why would we have recipes on the show? But you know what? Our laughter and our banter are clearly the same.
Happy 22nd.
Happy 22nd to you, Tom.
We'll see you next week.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org. Gosh, we have web stuff now versus cassette stuff then.
And don't forget, you can call us on the cell phone anytime at 800-462-7413.
Except Tom can't do that.
I can't. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0104Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.